you know, for me, it's really all about, at the end of the day, is trying to help people, you know. And you have to, it's like we've built up all these elaborate structures for allocating scarce resources, and, you know, I get a big house and you don't get one, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, I got into this because I want to help people, and it's a certain way of helping people. You have to fight, you know, you have to be willing to fight other people. That's just the way it is, you know. But, you know, I'm just excited about the possibilities of building stuff with really cool, smart people, and us having a lot of impact over time and helping people.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
And today on Hooked on Startups, I'm absolutely delighted to have Frank Banks from Zen, the co-founder and CEO of Zen. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matthew.
So Frank, tell us a little bit about Zen, because it is the most fascinating thing that you have created. Your background is Zynga. You're one of the co-creators of Mafia Wars. You've created this exchange, this platform that enables content creators to get paid. Is that anything like what Zen does?
Yeah, that's a good kind of primer description. We think of Zen as the ultimate video exchange for fandom communities. And really what that means is people who are, these days it's mostly kids, mostly teenagers, who are really into some aspect of pop culture. Like you can think of Harry Potter movies or anime movies or sports, K-pop, which is Korean pop music. With the kind of tools they have today, the smartphones are able to now create and distribute their own fan art in the form of videos, where they remix that content, they remix that K-pop video, they remix a bunch of anime, add their own effects and their own music. And this is how they express their identity and their kind of affinity with this larger kind of fan community. So it's really the modern evolution of fan art. And I can talk more about that later, but we've created the ultimate platform for that. So where you go, you're a fan of anime, you create videos, you share them with other people that are into the same thing, you create community, and then we help you monetize that audience. We help you monetize that attention.
So what happens right now? So they put the videos together and presumably they're just being posted on YouTube.
Sure. Mainly on Instagram, right? It's mainly because it's mainly short form, 15 seconds, but all this stuff, it's happening across all the platforms. And what they do today is they use a platform like that and they just simply don't make any money. So I first encountered these kids on Vine, and I was paying them to promote my app, which was actually a video editing app that was targeted at kids like them. And that worked really well. And they were so excited about being able to make money doing something that they were already really into doing.
Let's talk some numbers. So give me some idea about the sort of followings that some of these people have.
Some of these kids have, you know, 100,000, 200,000 or more in terms of their following.
So these are...
they're very popular.
So from an advertising perspective, these are super responsive, super niche markets where they're following sort of these celebrities effectively. Yeah. So that's why they're really useful, I guess, to an advertiser. So if I've got a particular product that I want to sell to that market, you can give me all the demographics from the various social networks because those tools exist.
Yeah, I mean, basically we're aggregating a bunch of these fandom niche communities. And so that would give you, as an advertiser, you can target these kids, and then, but you can also have enough reach where it makes sense for your product, right? I mean, it's
so how does the Zen platform come in? So does that mean that I would not post it onto Instagram, or I would post it through you and then onto Instagram?
No, it's its own platform that competes with Instagram. So you would, I mean, of course you can post most of these kids are multi-platform, right? But there's no, it's really about, you know, building the community on Zen itself and us really catering to their needs and being very specific about that. You know, on Instagram, they're part of this huge community. And in fact, Instagram ignores and actually bans these types of kids in many cases.
So looking at something like Vine, which was hugely successful, and it was known for being these short movies, some of the followings that people have created on those are in the millions.
Yes.
And although they were, you know, I think they Vine are no more. So what you're saying is that there is this community of people that are creating this art effectively.
Yeah.
And it's underserved by Instagram, because if you put it on Instagram, then there's just all the other noise around this. So you're creating this platform. And as an advertiser, I want to get in front of those people. So tell me more about how your platform, if I'm a creator, mm-hmm. how do I get paid to be on your platform?
Okay. So the way it works right now is one way, and in the future, it'll be more ways. So we have an ad revenue sharing program where we basically just source the ads ourselves. It's primarily been app install ads for things like mobile games, right? And we run the ads just like you'd see on, not that much different than you'd see on Instagram or Facebook's audience network or, you know, YouTube or any of these other kinds of platforms. The difference being that we then, you know, we have a custom attribution system that we then share that revenue with the content creator. So we know who is basically driving traffic to what ads, all the way through to the installation process, and then we just share that money with them.
Which again, it's very similar to what happens on YouTube, for example. Yep. So I can serve ads. So I might have some amazing video that I want, and I might have an ad for someone, you know, baking cookies or something. So
yeah. So there's a couple key differences. So this is more accessible. So on YouTube, you really can't make a lot of money unless you have a huge, humongous audience. And even those people, the people who have millions of followers on YouTube, they don't actually make that much money from YouTube. They make more of their money from offline kind of sponsorships and that kind of stuff, right? And that's because of YouTube's model, which is all based on, you know, showing an ad on your video, and it's all driven by how many views you get, right? So for us, we're trying to innovate around there, and we understand that that's actually not going to be, we don't think that's going to be a successful model moving forward. So we really just try to we're trying to monetize further down the kind of engagement funnel. So on Zen, we have these group chats where you can just, they're almost like old school public forums, if you remember that stuff that was really popular for a while. So this is how the kids do it these days. They just have big open public group chats, right? So we're looking at ways of how do you actually monetize that kind of engagement on a sort of on-demand sort of model, right? Where you opt in to see an ad, or a kid's like, hey, just look at this ad. I want you to see this ad. The kids control, or the creators control, when, where the ads are actually being presented. And so it's just a different way, and we think there's more room for innovation and more room to create value there. Second of all, this gets into sort of the marketplace part of our model, which is right now you ask me what kids do on, you know, existing platforms. And not just these kids, but all these, there's this whole social influencer kind of marketplace going on, right? Where big brands to little brands go on and they'll hire an influencer to sponsor, to, you know, promote some kind of product or service. So what these people do though, is there's a whole shadow market where they buy and sell exposure for those kinds of campaigns on a peer-to-peer basis, right? That's completely informal. So let's say you're an influencer on Instagram and I get a sponsorship campaign. And they're paying me by views of my post. I need to get more views. I want to drive more views. So I come to you and I say, hey, do a shout out for me of this post. And I'll pay you X for, you know, you put it up there for 3 hours. And you say, okay, whatever, I'll put it up there for $100. And I'm like, great. And because they're paying me $300. I pay you $100, right? And this is how the actual mechanism, that's the actual mechanism of how this stuff spreads. It's not, people think it's just all viral and no one's actually doing anything, right? But people are actually in this shadow market buying and selling and trading attention through these kinds of informal mechanisms. So what we're doing with Zen is we're building formal tools and technology for people to do that. So on Zen, you'll be able to just have an automated process where I can just sign up. You can sign up to sell or buy reposts. And it's all automated. You don't have to worry about fraud. You don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. You can buy and sell accounts, which is what people do on Instagram and these platforms now, but with an, you know, through an automated formal process. And that really is the core of what we're going to be doing going forward. And everything that we do is going to kind of converge around that marketplace model.
See, and that I think is absolutely fascinating, because I don't know if people are actually aware of the existence of these informal shadow markets, because I think most people's assumption is that to build an Instagram following, which can be very lucrative, because we know that Instagram is one of those networks that is very responsive and therefore very much in demand.
Yeah.
So I think the general understanding is that you build your Instagram following organically. So you're pushing people to your Instagram site through the other social networks. But what you're saying is, and let's explore more about how this shadow market works, because if I'm a brand, my agency that's working for me will be contacting people that have large followings and effectively buying, I suppose, unofficial adverts or shout outs, but that never, that don't actually appear to be adverts.
Right. Well, the actual advertisement, you know, it's fun. It can be tagged as an ad or whatever. But what they'll do is for that person to get that following in the first place, right? So, I mean, some of this is organic. Don't get me wrong. But the marketplace plays a really important function in there, like all marketplaces, right? So it's organic, but also you can just simply buy exposure to build up your organic following. That's what people do. So they just have an ad for so let's say we're both doing travel stuff, right? And you've already got a really big following of travel enthusiasts. And I'm doing something slightly different, maybe complementary to you, but I don't have a big following yet, but I'm doing good stuff. So I just need more people to know about what I'm doing. So I just need exposure to build my audience. It's just like when a television network has a new show, they just advertise a new show on the old show.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So that's just an ad to build up the audience, right, for another account, for another social media.
Because we know Instagram, again, we know that you tend to get kicked off Instagram pretty quickly if you try and manipulate the followers, and if you try and add and follow and unfollow people, you get the sort of Instagram email of death, I think it is, or whatever. But so these people that have tens or hundreds of thousands of followers have been able to build those followers up very quickly by going to people that are influencers in their similar communities and saying, look, as you say, if you're not an existing TV show, you shout about the new show. So that's... And how many people do you think know that about this and how that actually works?
A lot of everybody in the social influencer business knows about it. I think among the general public, lay people don't know about it at all.
But that is one of the big secrets, because I follow a lot of social media and I haven't heard anyone really talk about this, because this must be one of those secret weapons that they charge you for because they're getting results.
Exactly.
They don't tell you, because then everyone knows if you knew how to do it, you could just find the influencers and approach them yourself.
Yeah, you could just go directly to them. And then there's a tremendous amount of intermediaries in that space. And so, yeah, they don't really have an incentive to be, you know, really transparent about how it all works.
But therefore, in any market, the moment that you strip away that irregularity and you turn it into a much more efficient market, then normally what happens is you get growth, because, you know, and so tell me how Zen would solve those sort of problems then. So let's say that I've managed to build up a following on Zen, because as you say, I'm going to be putting my stuff on Instagram, on YouTube, on all of the other networks.
Yeah.
But my primary network is going to be Zen. So I'm going to be saying, like, you know, catch me on Messenger, catch me on Facebook or whatever. But instead of that, it'll be, if you want to see me or follow me on Zen. And the reason for that, and tell me more about how your technology allows me to monetize all these different approaches in a much more structured way.
Right. So it operates sort of like, just more like a structured marketplace where you could go and see who is offering, you know, offering to sell these sort of peer-to-peer ads, right? Or just actually the main mechanism for us will be the repost. It's a really, really interesting thing that's happened. It happened on Vine. It happens on Twitter, where that becomes the base attention commodity because it's really easy to use, right? Well, just repost my post and I'll pay you and keep it up for, you know, and people pay by the hour. This is how it works right now. People do this on Zen right now, right? So it's just a question that all we have to do is automate that, right? So all we just say, here's a, it's a marketplace, you need price discovery. So here's the place for everybody lists the prices, right? Here's my audience and here's what they, you know, here's the subject matter that we tend to talk about. Here's, and we can do all the, you know, keep all that data for you. And here's the price. And we can, and here's, and the other person, the buyer says, okay, here's the post that I want you to repost. And the system is like, fine, here it is. And it just automates the actual post. It says, okay, you want to post it on this date for how long, for how much. And the system just handles it all automatically, including the exchange of money. Right. Right now, all that happens, all that has to happen informally. And so there's a tremendous amount of, first of all, tremendous amount of inefficiency in the prices. The prices are all over the place because there's no one single clearinghouse for the prices. Right.
So in other words, as an advertiser,
yeah.
So I'm going to create a piece of content. I want this to be, I want to shout out. I want this to be in front of people. I want to leverage these influencers because if an influencer posts something, we know that a certain number of people are going to read that and you've got the metrics to show that. Yeah. So, and the great thing is I know what the price is. So presumably on the other side, in other words, the influencer side, how do they get that piece of advertising? Do they have to bid for it or does it?
Yeah, it would probably be some, yeah, like, I mean, in the beginning it would be manually and then over time it'd be more and more automated where you could just sign up, you know, here's my, this is sort of the way how publishing works today on something like Google AdWords or whatever. You just say, here's my, here's the price range that I want to accept or whatever. And then the system just handles everything for you.
So how international do you see, is this a US based, or I mean, something like Instagram is global.
Yeah.
I mean, is this something that you see as a global platform?
Absolutely. This, the phenomenon that's driving this is definitely global in scope in terms of, you know, smartphone adoption, you know, obviously social network adoption, the reach of content now and the way that people are able to interact with and participate in fandoms specifically, that's all global. Yeah.
And how would you, and how do you plan to handle the currency? Because one of the big issues is that if you've got an advertiser who's based in the US, they want to pay in dollars. If you've got your content creator in, you know, I guess, you know, pick a country. So how
Iran, maybe
it could be anywhere because I mean, if you're talking about a completely global marketplace, right, particularly with these fans and these niches and these groups. So one of the interesting things about what Zen is doing is the creation of a cryptocurrency, which is the Zen coin.
Correct. So, you know, really when people talk about blockchain technology and the promise of it and the kind of use cases that they can envision, you know, once I really understood what it's all about, I was like, this is exactly what our platform needs to create the product that I originally envisioned, right? Which is this decentralized, you have decentralized content creation and a decentralized marketplace, right? So on the blockchain, we can create a cryptocurrency that then, I mean, obviously it's going to solve sort of the whole, the foreign exchange issue. We'll have a single currency that is what you use to do all business on the exchange on the platform, buying and selling. And as a really the primary benefit of that is that coin now is in the hands of the creators or the people who are really creating the value here. And that makes them stakeholders in the network and not just users anymore. So they're almost more like partial owners of the network.
And the reason for that is that the coin itself has an intrinsic value which increases the more people that use it.
Well, the coin itself is just a piece of software. But it's gating the value, the attention market, right? So this is the only way for you to access the Zen attention market. So then it becomes a proxy for that value. So as long as that Zen, the platform is growing, right? And more people are using it, more and more people are using it to buy advertising of one sort or another, then the value of it will go up over time. Yeah.
And we talk about it being decentralized as well. So one of the risks that everybody runs when they're working with a single platform, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, is the fact that you are not in control of your data, you don't own the data, and you're not in control of your accounts being shut down at some point. So if you're building a business or you're building a fandom based on a relationship with that single service provider, then there are all sorts of risks because you're not in control. So how does your system protect me as a content provider from you waking up having a bad day and deciding to shut me down?
Well, I mean, if you're doing something bad, I want to be able to shut you down for one thing, you know, but that's a really good question. It's something that I don't have a complete answer for right now. So because you've got
I'm just talking generally about the difference. Yeah. Let's explore it in a wider context. Okay. The difference between centralized systems and decentralized systems. You know, it was one of the core benefits of something being decentralized, particularly when it's in a global environment, is the authority or the autonomy that gives and the ability for it to grow without having to have this centralized.
Right. But the decentralization in our case is really happening at the sort of the token level. So what that means is once the tokens are out there, people can use it to, transact for anything. Right. So they can go. We're going to try to incentivize and encourage that, but we ultimately can't control it. So people could say, well, you know, I have a gaming app, and this is something that we're going to try to encourage, that, hey, I want to accept Zen coins as payment. But we don't actually have any control over that. So it's a little bit different in terms of we're still acting as an aggregator, a central aggregator of the content. And that part is not going to be decentralized because
To maintain control, obviously.
Yeah. Well, because there's just not, the business model really doesn't work that way. Like the whole reason why in the content business, in the internet era, you need aggregators because you basically have infinite content. So you need some way to aggregate it, right? So that's where the value is for the content creator. I mean, for the platform, as aggregating of the content, we're gonna help them monetize it. But for the, you know, the content creators are all themselves basically decentralized. They can be anywhere. The real innovation here is that, you know, compared to Instagram or Facebook, their model is, hey, you know, get all your friends on here and then give us all this free content. And then we're going to run ads against that and we're going to make a shit ton of money. But the users themselves, the people who are actually providing all the content, don't make any money, right? In our model, the money flows out to the people who are actually creating the content and bringing all the other people to the platform to watch it in the first place.
You know, to give us an example of that. So let's say that you have a huge following on Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook knows that every time you post something, you're probably going to get a whole bunch of likes, shares, clicks. So at that point, they will be serving an ad alongside your content on the same page that will be generating a huge amount of revenue for Facebook, who've sold that ad to the person, you know, who's buying that ad. None of that revenue share goes to you.
Exactly.
And what you're saying is that that's completely different to what Zencoin is doing, because that content provider, as being the person that's driving that ad revenue, gets to share in the content.
That's exactly.
So my question really is just looking at the token or the coin itself, the fact that the coin could actually grow outside of the Zen network and could be used, because if it's associated with fans and a community that is very vibrant and active internationally,
yes,
then people would want to maybe leverage the coin somehow. I mean, how do you see that playing out in an ideal world?
Ideally, I mean, we're going to be doing a lot of deliberate things to make that happen. So what we want to do is bring sort of complementary businesses. So we just, our whole strategy, and I don't want to give too much away, but our whole strategy, right? But it's basically to just have the biggest, strongest ecosystem possible. And I'll give you an example that I think that'll make this really kind of clear. So I you and I have talked about my previous app, which is really where all the idea for Zen, the original idea for Zen came from. It was a video editing app for these same kind of fandom video creators that I marketed primarily through Vine and used them to do the promotion for it, right? Now, Vine is which was owned by Twitter before Twitter bought Vine before it even came out. And, you know, people have strong opinions about Twitter, but one thing I can tell you that they're really bad at doing is figuring out how to make money. Mm-hmm. Okay. That should be a very, you know, non-controversial statement because it's just absolutely facts. What their leadership doesn't understand or seem to understand how to do is how to build an ecosystem around their really popular products and make money from the ecosystem, right? So, and they were actually very well known, Twitter, and they did the same thing with Vine for basically just trying to destroy the third-party ecosystem that just naturally grew up around their products. What our token allows, what the cryptocurrency in this model allows us to do is actually formally integrate basically anybody that can add value in the ecosystem into our business model. So like in my case, you know, I had an editing app that was really targeted at Vine users. And there was other ones that were really popular as well. But Vine never did anything at all. And in fact, you know, they tried to prevent us from being in their ecosystem. Now with Zen Coins, I can actually just formally integrate anybody. Okay, you've got a video editor that my, you know, fan video art creators love. Hey, just accept, and they're making money in this ecosystem. Well, just accept Zen Coins as a form of payment, and now you've got a way to monetize your app. Right? Now you've got a ready-made community of customers.
And the benefit to all users is not just the benefit to Zen, because... Right. If the value of Zencoin compared to other cryptocurrencies increases, then the prices stay the same within the Zencoin community. But effectively, then their dollar or their Zen dollar becomes worth so much more in the outside world.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the reason. So what you're saying is more people that use the Zencoin currency, more people that become part of your ecosystem, as opposed to someone like Vine, where you're trying to shut people down, you're saying the more people that use our currency, then that's better for everyone because the more valuable that currency becomes.
Exactly. The more value that's in the ecosystem as a whole, the more valuable that Zencoin becomes. And so the more value those, the greater return, the greater incentive, the greater rewards for anybody who uses Zen coins or hold Zen coins, and mainly those people are going to be the content creators, the people who are creating the value in the first place.
And again, it's worth exploring this a bit more, because what you're saying is that, let's say that I bank 10 Zen coins for a piece of content that I create, and that could be worth $10. If I go to an exchange like Coinbase, for example, I could theoretically exchange my 10 Zen coin into $10. Right. But if the value of the Zen coin goes up because of more and more users, and because it's used in all sorts of other places, then my Zen coin could be worth $10, $15, $20. So it's worth me staying or growing my ownership of Zen coins in that community, because ultimately the value is not static. In other words, the value of my content I could sell you a piece of content today, and that value could actually be worth twice as much next year just because the coins that I've sold it for have gone up.
Exactly, because it's more like what you're getting in return for selling that, you know, helping build an audience and helping build a network is an asset that basically tracks the value of the network. So as the network gets more valuable, so does that, you know, that token.
And what you're saying there is that you're bringing it back full circle. You're rewarding people that are the content creators, which is really the value of the community, compared to something like Facebook, which leverages good content for the benefit of
Facebook. The company. Right.
What you're saying is that you're enabling people that create content to be part of the community and to share not only in the immediate rewards, but also in the growth or the future upside.
Exactly.
And that's why it's much more compelling than something like Instagram or some of these other networks, which have a disconnect between the content providers and the network.
Right. So they don't, because their models work so well, they don't need to incorporate the content creators directly into their business model.
Because they're selling advertising, they're selling, you can boost your posts, you can sponsor posts. That's a traditional advertising method.
Yeah.
And again, if you think about the potential growth for what you're doing, it's not limited to geography. It's not limited to demographics.
Right.
So you're not, even though I guess initially you're focusing on a particular demographic, is your technology available to other content providers and other fan groups?
Eventually, we want to serve everyone.
Which is
everybody watches video. So, which is one of the reasons why I find it compelling. I mean, this is just, you know, this visual communications in general and video now and in the future, this is something that everyone's going to use. Everybody watches video. Everybody watches video on their smartphones. So eventually we want to build, you know, an ecosystem that will serve everyone. Yep.
Well, it's just absolutely astonishing. But also, is that what I love about this is not just the change, it's the fact, is it the cryptocurrency that makes the real difference? Is that the quantum leap forward that allows you to do this and compete with some of these much bigger, more entrenched players?
I think so. Yeah. That's the key innovation. It was the last piece of the puzzle. I already had this little marketplace idea, you know, about the repost from the very beginning. But then when you add that cryptocurrency as that last piece, like I said, transforming users into stakeholders in the network. So you solve one of the fundamental problems of network-based businesses, right? Whereas there's a great graph in an essay that sort of a non-technical white paper that I wrote about this. So it's, you know, on the one hand, the earliest investors in something like Instagram or Facebook, they're the ones that get the greatest return, right? Makes sense. They took the most risk. Whereas for the users, you know, the billionth user on Facebook is a much better product than it was for the first 10 users, right? So there's this huge gap there. And it's, you know, it's called the chicken and egg problem, where if you want to kind of spin up a new network-based business, like a social network or social video network, you know, why would anybody get on there at first? Because there's no one else on there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But now if you have the cryptocurrency, it actually incentivizes you to be an early adopter and help grow the network, because you're actually going to get the biggest financial return if you're an early adopter, if you're an early user.
And that's critical, because what's the expression? No one wants to be the first person on the dance floor.
Exactly.
However, what you're saying is that everybody wants to be the first person, because you're effectively getting this cryptocurrency, the Zen coin, at its lowest price compared to other cryptocurrencies and other traditional currencies.
You'll get it when the network still has all the growth ahead of it. That's why I'm not that worried about, like, people are like, well, what if Instagram does that? Well, Instagram already has 800 million people, right? So all the growth, how much more can they grow? I mean, you know, they can grow big, but not, the hyper growth is already behind it. Exactly. So you can get in now, just like you've seen the phenomenon, exactly like what happened with Bitcoin and Ethereum themselves. It's the same mechanism.
Let's talk about that, because just to put some numbers around it, I mean, when Bitcoin, if we go back, you know, 3-4 years, something like that. Yeah. And forgive me if I haven't got these numbers absolutely right, but Bitcoin was trading hands for $50 to $100 per coin.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, it was up at 4,000 plus.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's calling it a bubble, but there are reasons behind the fact that Bitcoin is increasing. Is because there are only 21.
Exactly.
Is it 21 million, I think, or 21? There's only 21 million Bitcoins being minted. So it's a bit like gold to a certain extent. There's only a finite amount.
It's some scarcity built into the whole economics of the thing.
So, you know, the, you know, price is normally a function of supply and demand. So if demand is high and supply is limited, then the valuation goes up. So if you're holding on to Zencoin, it has the same as your network grows. So this is a very exciting time for you, I guess, right now, where we're seeing this explosion of the understanding of what cryptocurrencies are and the network technology. So what is your, what is your most exciting thing right now for you?
The most exciting thing. That's interesting. I think because it can drive, just by the nature of our business, and this is just sort of a happy coincidence. So we can actually be among the people who drive the mainstream adoption of cryptocurrencies, right? So even, you know, with the huge run-up that we just talked about with Bitcoin and Ethereum and the altcoins, I mean, this is something that, you know, still very much on the fringe in terms of actual participation, right?
Because someone described it as we're at page 60 of a 1,000-page novel.
Absolutely, we're just at the cusp. I mean, this is like this is not even pre-game. I mean, this is before the game, right? The game hasn't even really started yet. So, you know, so when you think about what will happen once, you know, something like things like Zen happen, and there'll be other things that really drive mainstream adoption over the next, say, 20 years. I just think that. I don't know how you couldn't be excited about that.
And you've seen this before, because what the sort of stuff that you've done before, you've seen, you know, where you were a fairly, you know, important part of Zynga, which was the company behind Mafia Wars that you were with.
Wars, Farmville, yeah.
You know, these are, I mean, Zynga's, what is that, $200 million company in turnover terms? You know, it's pretty.
Might be more than that. I don't know. I mean, at one point it was, you know, it was Silicon Valley darlings, you know, high flying, fastest business to whatever, I don't remember what it was. It was one of the fastest growing businesses of all time at one time.
Absolutely. Yeah, but that's, you know, I did some research on Zynga. I think it's something like $200 million in revenues, which is not the billions of dollars that Facebook's doing, but still right. To make, even now, because I think one of their big products is Words for Friends now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so you've seen this. So in other words,
yeah,
you've seen these types, this type of network effect. Mm-hmm. And if Zynga had cryptocurrencies then, would they be the next unicorn now, do you think?
I mean, it's not a substitute for, you know, for a strong business model, but they could have done a lot of more interesting things for sure. I mean, you know, the possibilities are really wide open with cryptocurrencies and blockchain in general. So yeah, I think something like that could have made the difference between, you know, how Zynga ended up where it is now, which was, you know, it was once one of the fastest growing companies, and then it wasn't, right?
So my point, though,
that could have been the difference between them, you know, not being able to maintain that kind of growth and still being in the pantheon right now.
And the fact that we're at this very beginning, and the fact that the cryptocurrency just unlocks all of those payment problems, cross-border issues.
Oh yeah.
So it must be a fascinating time.
It is. It feels like, for someone like me, you know, I'm older than I look. So, well, at least that's what people tell me. To me, I feel like I look old. But you know, I lived through the dot-com era, and I was intimately involved as much as someone could be in the middle of nowhere in Champaign, Illinois, at the time. But this really feels like that. So when there was just a tremendous amount, and I'm talking about like mid to late 90s, right? It was just, I just knew, and a lot of other people knew, that this technology is definitely going to change the world, without a doubt. I mean, and you're right at the very, very beginning of it, and it's just a tremendous amount of energy and enthusiasm and just all kinds of smart people and all kinds of, you know, hucksters and all, you know, just this wide spectrum of people, but just a tremendous amount of energy going into this.
Yeah, there is. And also it's got adoption. I mean, the global cryptocurrency market has a value of over $120 billion right now. So
yeah, it's a lot.
You know, it's not, it's gone past that point where it's just an idea on paper. So,
oh yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, the rocket ship has already taken off for sure.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at this point, I need to ask you some very, very important questions.
Okay.
And all, I mean, put that aside. I mean, that was...
Yeah, that, you know, enough of that world-changing stuff.
Yeah, let's get into the real important questions.
Nitty-gritty.
So you know what's coming, Frank, don't you?
I believe so. I hope
this so. This is the questionnaire that James Lipton has very kindly borrowed from me. No, that I borrowed from him, sorry.
Right. Get the attribution right.
So my question number one, which of course you've been preparing for a number of weeks now, is what is your favorite word?
My favorite word is can, C-A-N, not, you know, tomatoes in a can, but yes, we can, this can do, have a can do attitude. You know, I'm really all about, you know, like yourself, entrepreneurs are the eternal optimists. And, you know, I'm just really all about, let's just do it. Let's just do it.
And what is your least favorite word?
Powerlessness, which is sort of the opposite of that.
And I asked you this earlier, but what are you most excited about right now? If you could sort of distill that.
You know, when you're in the kind of day-to-day grind with this stuff, it's kind of hard to sometimes just take a step back and be like, okay, what's really at stake here? Or what are we really trying to accomplish? Or, you know, for me, it's really all about in the end of the day is trying to help people, you know, it's like we've built up all these elaborate structures for allocating scarce resources and, you know, I get a big house and you don't get one, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, I got into this because I want to help people. And it's a certain way of helping people. You have to fight, you know, you have to be willing to fight other people. That's just the way it is, you know, but, you know, I'm just excited about the possibilities of building stuff with really cool, smart people and us having a lot of impact over time and helping people, you know.
Which is fabulous. And what turns you off right now?
You know, I really, honestly, I think really the Silicon Valley establishment, you know, they basically, you got these people, and I heard it, you know, I've been working in this industry a long time. You hear all about this meritocracy and all this crap. And then there's like no black people in there. Right. So they'll say that to me. I'm like one black person out of 1,000 in a room or something. And they're like, it's a meritocracy. I'm like, well, shit, we must be some fucking idiots or something. You know, like, do you must think we're an idiot if I'm going to accept that. We're idiots if we're going to accept that explanation, right? You actually have to believe that. So, you know, this whole thing, and it's really come to the fore a little bit now with, you know, all the kind of sexual harassment stuff going on in Silicon Valley. But the whole Silicon Valley establishment, you know, the little club of these guys deciding, you know, thinking we're the guys that, you know, we're the smartest people in the world and we're going to change. You know, I mean, that's a bunch of garbage. Yeah. It's really a bunch of garbage.
Fascinating. So, I don't know how to. I don't really want to follow that with my next question, but
no,
I will.
No, please.
What sound or noise do you love? It seems to be a bit of a. I need to reorder these questions, I think. But I need to know.
Yes, dinner bells. I love dinner bells. I like bicycle bells. You know what? I love the sound of a good foghorn or a boat horn being out on the water.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's a good sound. Yeah,
I can visualize just the expanse, the space, the
yeah.
And what sound or noise do you hate?
Sound or noise that I hate. I'd say right now just the sound of a lot of there's a lot of divisiveness in the culture right now happening in the politics, right? That I think is just kind of really a bunch of it's masking a lot of the real underlying issues. And just a lot of talking and no doing, I think, is just, that's a sound that I don't like. I mean, if you're going to talk, do something.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And what is your favorite curse word? You see, this works well.
Yeah. This is
James Lipton, you need to improve your questionnaire.
James Lipton, you know.
What is your favorite curse word?
Read them and weep, James. Well, I'd say by frequency of usage, it has to be fuck. I mean, you know, fucking whatever, which, you know, okay. That's probably a lot of other people's.
You're not alone. It is a fabulous word. It's the all time favorite, I think.
It's so multi-purpose, right? I mean, it has so much, you know, you can use it in all kinds of scenarios.
It is.
So, but honestly, my favorite one is, God damn it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Now I love just this, just the.
God damn it. Not God damn it. It's GOTDAMMIT. God damn it.
Which is, that's not a trademarked.
I hope not.
Will people have to pay you in Zen coin every time they say that?
I'm going to work on that.
So there you are. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Restaurateur.
Oh, well. Yes. And what profession would you not like to attempt?
Celebrity of any sort.
Wow, said from deep experience. Yeah. My final question, Frank, is if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I wouldn't want him to hear, how'd you get here? I mean, that probably would be bad.
Well, he'd probably know, being God and all
that. Yeah, you're right. You know, the whole omniscient thing. No, I would like to hear, not bad for an atheist. You actually helped a lot of people. And so, you know, I think you're good. We've got an infinity pool and Hitch is out there having a drink and you should go join him.
Fantastic.
That's Christopher Hitchens. Yeah.
Whole new perspective. It's enough to make you change being an atheist almost. You
know? Almost. Yeah.
Frank, how do people get in touch with you? How do they find out more about what you're doing with ZenCoin and, okay, and Zen, the platform?
Sure. You can email me at just my name, frank@autozen. That's AUTOZEN.TV. And you can just go to zenvideo.co.
That's fantastic. Well, yeah. I'm sure that we'll be hearing a lot more about Zen and, you know, you'll be pushing away the executives from Instagram, you know, as you'll do. But Frank, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. It's been brilliant talking to you and I really look forward to following the progress of you and Zen.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Matthew. It was a lot of fun. Thanks.